Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back in, everybody, to the Stat Sheet Podcast. A privilege, as always, to have you with us. The NFL regular season is done. We have teams eliminated that thought they were going to be in. We've got teams in that nobody thought was going to be in. We are loaded for a lot of talk about all of that. Simon is back, as always. Ronan is here, as always. We have head coach firings. We have retirings. We have injuries. We have resignings. We got a lot of stuff to get to. Let's jump right on it. First of all, Sunday Night Football. The Bills beat the Dolphins 21-14. Perhaps not the most scintillating of games, but still there were things at stake here. It was close. It held our attention. Simon, go ahead and tell us what your first thoughts were on it.
Yeah, absolutely. So first thoughts were, it felt like it was a little devoid of fireworks, probably just because, you know, Josh Allen got his interceptions out of the way at the beginning of the game. We didn't have the big, like, 70-yard Tyreek Hill catch and run touchdown, anything like that. But definitely an entertaining game to watch back and forth. I mean, the first thing that really caught my eye was on the first possession for the Bills. They marched right down the field. The Dolphins, it just highlighted all the injuries they've sustained. We talked about them last week, not only the for sure guaranteed ones like the Jalen Phillips and the Bradley Chubbs, but Tua got banged up last week. Jalen Waddle's been out with the ankle, Raheem Mostert as well. In this game alone, Dolphins linebacker Jerome Baker had injured his wrist, and he had surgery today. He's probably done for the year. Edge rusher Andrew Van Ginkle, who's their third edge rusher on the depth chart at the start of the season, he's going to at least miss the Chiefs game. And I think they got another rotational linebacker hurt in this one as well. But the Bills just have been run blocking so well with the interior of that front for them. That they were able to run the ball early, run when they needed to. You know, Josh Allen was making, you know, good plays for the most part of that first drive until that, you know, ridiculous Josh Allen interception. And Miami's answer to that, which worked for a couple drives there, was to start blitzing more and to rush Josh Allen. And that worked too, because then he had the fourth down arm punt and some wild throws. He started running around behind the line of scrimmage a little bit more. But eventually he settled in. The Dolphins didn't have the real horses to do that all game, right? Like, oh, let's rush Josh Allen all game long without our best pass rushers and without our best corners. And eventually it didn't really net out for them. Obviously, losing 21-14, it felt like a bigger deficit than that, but the Bills' turnovers kept it closer than it felt really off the scoreboard. Ronan, what about you? What were the first things that came to mind watching the game for you?
You know, I think it was an impressive win for the Bills. I think it says a lot about what their team is. You know, three turnovers from Allen, the two picks, and then whenever Wilkins literally just took the ball away from Allen.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That was nuts. Absolutely nuts. But aside from the turnovers, the Bills played really good offensively, which, you know, take that with a grain of salt because, oh, they played great aside from the three turnovers. But, I mean, 30 of 38 from Josh Allen, 359 yards and two touchdowns to go with those two picks. Allen, once again, it's kind of every time they're in primetime, it seems like it happens. And then we hop on here and I sit here and rant about Josh Allen once again leads the team in rushing, 15 attempts for 67 yards. I mean, 4.5 a clip, so I guess it's not inefficient, but, man, you don't want your quarterback heading into the playoffs. Granted, well, no, because they were in no matter what heading into that game. They knew they were in. So yeah, a little bit risky having your quarterback rush the ball 15 times. But you know what? They ended up getting the 2 seed. And the Bills are kind of rolling right now. The team stats, right, the total yards and all of that, very, very, very odd. 473 yards from the Bills. 275 from the Dolphins. The Dolphins are known for, you know, big chunk plays. Simon, like you were kind of referring to, I think the longest play from this game or in this game from the Dolphins was 25 yards. Granted, I think there were a couple 20-yard chunk plays, but they kept it limited. The Bills defense did. So I think that there's a framework on how to beat both teams. And it was an all-around good game. It wasn't, like you said, fireworks, but it was a gritty Week 18 conference game as we near the playoffs. Ben?
Yeah, hats off to the Buffalo Bills here. I mean, 5-game winning streak to close out the regular season. Most people, myself included, had kind of just pushed them off to the side and said, hey, you know, see me later if you get hot. Well, guess what they did? So hats off to Buffalo. They're able to finish it out on the road here to capture the division and catch number 2 seed here. So hats off to them. Miami, I almost feel sorry for the Dolphins because not everybody believed they were legit in the first place. But even for those of us who thought, hey, maybe they got a chance here, boy, it's just all falling apart here. So not only is the offense not playing well for the past 3 or 4 weeks, it's just not. But they're all beat to pieces too. I mean, they've got injuries all over the place on offense, but especially on defense. And now they've lost the home field advantage, and now they're on the road, and they've got no momentum. I mean, at this point, I don't think it's Super Bowl. I think it's just, hey, let's show up, let's grit it out, let's play tough and see what we can get here, because they got nothing going for them right now, Simon. I mean, even if you were a believer, and I know you weren't, but even for those of us who might have been saying, hey, maybe they got a chance, there's nothing to hang your hat on for Miami right now. Nothing.
Yeah, I mean, aside from, like, if Tua being healthy keeps this team from on record looking like exactly what they looked like last year, right? Really good in September, a little worse in October, a little worse in November. Tua gets hurt. We have all the concussion drama and everything. And what did they finish? Like 9-8, 10-6, I think 9-8. And they lose with Skylar Thompson in the first round of the playoffs last year, right? They're 11-6. Which and they sustained their high powered offense for way longer this year than they did last year. They had a better run game. The offensive line played better despite having a few more injuries than it did last year. So they very obviously kept Tua healthy, which was huge, but also just had a better designed offense, I think, to sustain longer in the year. But the issues still fall on Tua is still this team's quarterback, and we see the limitations in Tua and what he's doing within this offense. And it's not to say that he can't continue to get better and maybe get better at elevating, but like his 2 interceptions are perfect interception or perfect snapshots of the issues with Tua being your guy and the way this offense is run. Because Mike McDaniel designed this offense to take advantage of Tua's processing and accuracy. So that is, hey, quick read, here's the throw you're going to make. X is going to happen, you're going to throw Y. So Tua blindly makes these throws. It's something that we see Jared Goff do with Detroit as well. And so predetermines he's going to go to Tyreek Hill on that first interception on the first drive. Tyreek's in the slot. And just like, you know, there's triple coverage right there. He completely misses it. And then in the last drive for the second interception, Chase Claypool runs a bad route, and people noted that on Twitter, and I'm very keen on realizing that. I saw it for a long time in Pittsburgh. But again, Tua just like decided he was going to throw there, didn't account for Taylor Rapp coming from over the top, and he underthrew him by a couple yards. And did that on the Tyreek Hill one as well. So that next level of, okay, when the chips are down, right, when Tyreek Hill is banged up, when Jalen Waddle is out, when Raheem Mostert is out, when my whole line is banged up, I have to go make a play against a red-hot defense that has injuries, so we should be able to take advantage of it, right? I haven't even mentioned, you know, Rasul Douglas for the Bills. He went out in the second quarter, so they were on even further backup cornerbacks. I can't even remember which linebacker went out for them. Tyrell Dotson, he was a guy that kind of settled into being a starting linebacker next to Terrell Bernard. He got hurt in this game. That's where you want your quarterback, who, by the way, at the end of the season, you might have to pay a very large amount of money to. You want him to be able to move around the pocket and say, okay, I have to come off that read and go to the next one, whether it's in the pocket, whatever. I have to come off of this read and I have to make a play. And that's not what Tua is right now. I don't know if you take the training wheels off the offense and open it up a little more, if he has the ability to do that. I kind of doubt it based on the athletic limitations. But like you said, Ben, like kind of similar to last year, where it's like the wheels are kind of falling off at the end. Last year, we had the excuse of no Tua. This year, you don't have an excuse. It's because of Tua, Ben.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe Mike McDaniel can scheme up something. There's enough players still here from Miami where they're still a little dangerous. But I don't think even the most optimistic people right now are feeling like Miami's got a shot to run this table in the AFC from as deep a hole as they're in at the moment. All right, Simon and Ronan, anything else here on the game or the injuries from the game? Anything else you want to hit?
I don't think so.
All right, we're good. So let's move on then to Saturday Night Football. The Texans beat the Colts 23-19 in what was probably one of my favorite games of the entire week heading into it. This was the one I was really looking forward to. And while, again, it wasn't 35-38 or anything like that, still a very interesting game. Ronan, first thoughts on it?
Yeah, Ben, down to the wire. C.J. Stroud, it seems, might have solidified his Offensive Rookie of the Year campaign. He went 20 of 26 for 264 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. He just played C.J. Stroud football. Nico Collins, he's a legit receiver, guys.
Bad man. And you pair him with
Tank Dell whenever he's healthy. Oh, my God. You might not even have to touch the skill position in Houston, which, you know, a year ago we were sitting there talking about it being in shambles. So, I mean, kudos to D'Amico Ryans and to C.J. Stroud and just everyone over there in Houston, because they willed themselves into the playoffs. This was a team that personally I didn't think would achieve over 5-6 wins, but they, you know, waltzed right into the playoffs with a home advantage as their 10-7. You got to love it. The end of the game, however, you do not love if you're a Colt fan. Gardner Minshew, fourth down, I believe fourth and one, and they the Colts hit running back into the flat. You would assume it's to Jonathan Taylor. It's not. It's to Goodson. I apologize. I don't remember his first name. Maybe Darren?
Starts anyway. With a T.
Yeah, okay. Well, not Darren.
That's all I got. Shout out Goodson.
You know, he's going through it right now, but it wasn't a great ball by Minshew anyway. Goodson was able to get his hands on it. So, you know, the home fans were probably sitting there yelling, you know, he got his hands on it, this and that. In all reality, not a great ball by Minshew. And it ended Indianapolis' season. But you got to give kudos to Steichen on the opposite side. Both of these coaches were rookie head coaches, right? First year in the league. And they brought their teams to very, very new heights. The Colts have kind of been an unfortunate team as of late. Lots of veteran quarterbacks that haven't necessarily been able to get them over the hill. They kind of purged the veterans, I guess, in that locker room and kind of started fresh in Indianapolis. And it seems to be working once Anthony Richardson gets back. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. And over in Houston, they're making their way to the playoffs, Simon.
Yeah, man, the Texans are just are rolling, and they're kind of limping in as well from a health standpoint. Their key guys have gotten back here in the last couple of weeks. But you talk about that skill room, and it's great, and it's never been fully healthy at the same time. I mean, Tank Dell is obviously on IR. Robert Woods and Noah Brown were not playing in this game. We saw a lot of Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie out there running routes, which truthfully I'm really excited about. Those were guys that, you know, going into this year, I was like, hey, you know, see how the young guys do. This will be interesting. And they're not even on the field because these other veterans, you know, like a Noah Brown and Nico Collins have been playing well throughout the season. C.J. Stroud, man, you know, just coming off of what I was just saying about Tua, right, that this is what can happen when you get a dude like this, because it's not a perfect offense, right? It's not a perfect roster by any means. I mean, even on defense, you have solid pieces all the way around. Will Anderson is forming into a star, but he still may never be a, like, 12-plus sack a season guy. Derek Stingley, we'll see how high up the cornerback ranks he can get. but there's no superstar on this team other than Laremy Tunsil at left tackle, and he actually struggled in this game. But Stroud comes in, and you just make plays and you win. You know, this team was starting a Charlie Heck at right tackle because Heck, they didn't know what to do with the position. George Fant, they brought in at some point during the game. I couldn't even figure out if he was benched or hurt or whatever. Juice Scruggs is starting at guard, and Ben's guy, Matt Dieter, is starting at center for this team. Like, it's a makeshift line, and it hasn't even really been playing that well. They haven't gotten really any good consistent push in the run game. And Stroud was actually seeing a little bit of pressure. This Colts defense was fifth in the league in sacks going into this game. They only got two on Stroud because he's just so good at managing the pocket, getting rid of the ball when he needs to. He has the arm talent to throw at. He's not doing the Stafford, Mahomes, Lamar Jackson weird arm slots and stuff like that, but he can throw off his back foot a little bit, right? He doesn't have to be perfectly set up with a ton of space to get a good base and balance off to throw the ball. So, I mean, he, like, just incredible stuff. I want to focus on the Colts here a little bit because we've been singing Shane Steichen's praise all year, and this was a weird game. I don't know if it just had to do with more what he thought the Texans defense was going to throw at him. But the Colts could never put anything together through the air of this one. I think Minshew had like 150 yards passing, something like that. Just rough stuff. The first quarter or the first drive was pretty good. You know, he was hitting Michael Pittman a lot. Pittman had three catches for 21 yards on that first series, or in that first drive. And he finished the game with five catches for 44 yards. So he had over half his production on that first drive of the game. The run game, however, was really effective for the Colts at the beginning of the early in this one. Jonathan Taylor rushing yards by quarter. First quarter, 50 yards. Second quarter, 31 yards. Third quarter, 84 yards with that big touchdown run. Fourth quarter, 23 yards. And the Texans just adjusted. You know, the defensive linemen seemed to get faster and stronger and better as the game went along, whereas the Colts offensive linemen, less of what they were doing. They were doing some fun, like, pin pull stuff and pulling some of the guys around, and that was working at the beginning, but the Texans were able to read it out by the end. And here's my thing on Shane Steichen for this game and what I didn't love. The Colts had three more pass attempts in the first half than run attempts, despite the fact that obviously the passing game wasn't working. Shane Steichen sees that, adjusts. 11 more runs in the second half than the pass attempts. So, like, that's nice, right? That sounds good. But look how we trend in the second half in terms of yardage. And then by the fourth quarter, you can't do anything on the ground because you've shown everything you've shown at this point, right? They've seen it a bunch of times. You did it over and over and over again. And the Texans, being a good defense, having D'Amico Ryans calling, you know, being in charge of the defense, they figured out what they needed to do. And they completely stymied the Colts' offensive run game by the fourth quarter, which is probably why Jonathan Taylor isn't in there on that crucial fourth down play where it's like you really like to just be able to run the ball with Jonathan Taylor and pick up a couple yards. So I wish I had been a little more balanced, still leaning towards the run game in terms of the Colts offensive game plan throughout the game there, instead of spamming it in the second half to the point that when push comes to shove, you're not able to get what you want at the end of the game. But, you know, maybe there's something to the fact that, hey, it got them back in the game. They only lost by 4 points. I don't know, but that was just something that I felt during the game too. It was like, okay, I'm glad they're running it now, but it's starting to not work. Ben, what did you think about this one?
Fun game. I almost hate that these two teams, two coaches, two young quarterbacks are in the same division because they're going to be fighting each other a lot over the next few years, but I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully by this year, the next same time, we'll have a couple more games between these two teams that are just as scintillating with just as much on the line. So we'll see for next year. We got a lot to get to. Anything else from this game for either one of you two guys? All right, well, let's move on to some injuries then. We've got Steelers edge TJ Watt, MCL sprain, multi-week. Lions tight end Sam Laporta, hyperextended knee, day-to-day or week-to-week, depending on who you talk to or what report you're listening to. Eagles quarterback Jalen Hurts, who really has not been healthy for quite a while now, but also had a finger injury there in the game. And then Eagles wide receiver A.J. Brown with a knee injury. He went out fairly early in that game. So, Ronan, what's jumping out to you off of this list?
you know, being the not putting bias aside, but the Rams fan that I am, the Sam Laporta injury kind of catches my eye because – that's one of those things. I think Kelce had the same thing happen before the season, I believe, is something that I saw, and he was able to come back a couple of days after. But there are other cases where, you know, might take a week or two. So time will really tell for this. Laporta has been a huge part of that Lions offense. He's been a nice safety blanket for Jared Goff. Him not being on the field might cause a bit of a problem for that Detroit offense. And then obviously you mentioned it, Ben, Jalen Hurts, his finger, he hasn't been healthy truly all season. And, you know, you don't want to, none of these guys are truly 100% healthy. So hopefully this isn't anything that'll linger too much and cause a disturbance in his play. But I guess we'll just have to see, Ben.
Simon.
TJ Watt, man. TJ Watt. And I haven't sat down and done everything, but this is your, and I haven't even looked at the odds, but this is a front runner or lead, you know, top the charts in defensive player of the year odds at this point in the season, I think. Leads the league in sacks. Was voted the Steelers MVP. Steelers don't win games when TJ Watt doesn't play. It just doesn't happen over the last, you know, 3-4 years. So this is going to be really huge for them. I would be extremely, extremely surprised, no matter how much he wants to and how much of a freak he is, for him to not play against the Buffalo Bills in Wild Card Weekend. We'll talk about Wild Card Weekend in a little bit. But if Watt misses a game for the Steelers, it's going to be real tough for them to kind of make anything happen in terms of trying to pull out a victory. Maybe Minkah Fitzpatrick comes back and that helps offset it. I've talked before about, you know, the big three on the defense, Watt, Cam Hayward, Minkah Fitzpatrick, seem to never be healthy at the same time. When they are, the team rolls, but we'll see what comes down to that. He got hurt in that week 18 game against the Ravens. Defensive tackle Montrevious Adams kind of just bumped knees into him, but it's a grade 2 MCL sprain. So if somehow they were able to get past the Bills, there's a chance he could play the week after that. We'll just kind of be hopeful spectators on that front. And then just to round it out, yeah, A.J. Brown, he nor Hurts finished the game against the Giants. The vibes are just real bad with the Eagles, right? I mean, they're playing an ugly game against the Bucks Monday night Wild Card weekend. Like, this feels like you remember 2 years ago when the Bengals lost to, who was it? Who won that Super Bowl 2 years ago? Ronan, who was it?
The Los Angeles Rams.
It would be the Los. That's right. And we were like, oh, man, the Bengals, year from hell incoming, right? This happens to everybody. And it didn't happen. They didn't have the Super Bowl hangovers. I mean, they didn't get back, but they had a great season following. Super Bowl hangovers back, man. It's here in full force. Despite the record and despite, you know, for so long through the season, they were winning close games and finding ways to pull things out. And that looked impressive. And I'm always into that sort of thing. It's just, it feels like a lot of stuff just piling on the Eagles right now. So it's a tough go for them. I think both guys are going to be in good shape to try and play. But, you know, Sirianni was even coy about Hurts playing in Wild Card Weekend. But I think Brown is a little bit more likely. I think he was kind of held out pretty quick. They made the call of just like, hey, whatever, you could go back in, but we're going to keep you out of here. So, well, I mean, we'll see, man. This is what it comes down to when it comes to the playoffs. Who is healthy and peaking at the right times? And doesn't feel like the Eagles are that team right now, unfortunately, Ben.
Eagles have a lot of questions. The playoffs will provide answers here over the next 2 to 3 weeks. That's the injuries. We've got some firings to talk about, some resignings and some hirings, and we'll do it right after this break.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Short Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Short Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by BoxScore Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite, and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes. And that's Tricky with two I's.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. And as we say every week, please listen to our other podcasts that are part of this network. We have a number of folks that are producing a lot of content every week. Not quite every day of the week, but almost. We have a lot of content coming out. So by all means, check it all out when you have the time. Some firings to get to. Black Monday in the NFL, of course, is here. Probably not as big as I expected it to be, at least not yet. I kind of thought we might have another shoe or two to drop, but still we had a couple of things to come down and very noteworthy for sure. So starting off with Falcons head coach Arthur Smith, this was actually on Sunday. They didn't even wait until Monday to do it, but Arthur Smith has been let go after his time with the Atlanta Falcons, and so they'll be looking for a new coach there in Atlanta. Simon, first thought.
Yeah, man, Arthur Smith, I don't even remember where this game was played. I had so few tabs on the NFC South games for week 18, man. I was just like, just tell me who's coming out of there, and I don't want to pay attention to the rest of it. Arthur Smith probably barely got a cold drink poured at home before he got someone on Twitter said that the Dropbox, or not Dropbox, the Outlook notification with his letter. And I just started laughing. Listen, I think I said it the last couple of weeks predicting this. You never root for guys to get fired. You want people to have jobs and families to be in good shape and everything. Although we're not worried about Arthur Smith financially, for sure. But I mean, this had to happen, man. Not just from a, I know the fantasy football community was up in arms about Smith all year, but just look at the product on the field, what they did to Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heineke this year, how he was treating media members. I mean, clearly the vibes were all off. So it's really, I mean, the jokes about the playoff matchups are the script writers really got it right this year. The script writers did the right thing in making sure the Falcons lost this game. And it wasn't like one last stitch, like, ooh, a good hurrah. Let's keep Smith for one more year and see what happens. This was the right move, the right time. All these guys are still young. Let's fulfill Ben's dream and get Ben Johnson in here for the Falcons and really turn this thing around. Before I get to my, I'm sneaking my PSA, my public Simon announcement in this section, but it's a little off the Arthur Smith actual firing. Does anybody want to chime in on the Arthur Smith firing piece of this before I get to the next point?
Yeah. You know what? I'd love to hop in because I just want to note how attractive this job should be to any head coaching candidate. I mean, you look at that offense and it is littered with talent. And then defensively, they made a lot of good moves. So I think that there's a lot to work with there in Atlanta. Unfortunately, Smith wasn't really able to make it work. But I mean, between Robinson and London and Pitts, I think they're, you know, it's the old saying, a quarterback away, but you get a legit quarterback in Atlanta, and that is a very frightening team along with a good head coach.
What are you talking about? They have a good quarterback. They have Desmond Ridder. He's right there, man.
Hey, listen, trade up. I think they got a top 10 pick. Trade the farm. Go up to one with – or trade with Chicago. Go up to one and get your guy. And, that, I mean, just imagine Ben Johnson with Caleb Williams or Drake May or whoever you want.
Yeah, I'm mostly joking here. The Desmond Ridder run in Atlanta is probably over, unfortunately. I can't wait to see his Geno Smith resurgence in 7 years. Everybody mark it down. I don't know what we'll be doing then, but let's get a Zoom meeting for 7 years from today and we'll talk about it. Ben, I think you're ready for the PSA. Is there anything you want to say on Arthur Smith though?
Go ahead and hit it. I want to hear the PSA, man.
So I want to move to the Jameis Winston, Jamal Williams victory formation touchdown of it all about this game. My public Simon announcement about this is Twitter's been all over this. It's been a fun spectrum of seeing all the Saints players come out and defend Jameis Winston like he's their own mother. Then there's Shannon Sharp, who's out there saying he should be cut and lose his job today. And interestingly enough, the offensive linemen who are out there on Twitter teaching people things, they didn't really start tweeting until like this afternoon, which makes sense being them. But this was how I felt about that play. It wasn't an issue that the Saints tried to score a touchdown. I don't care about that. Yeah, it's the end of the game. They won. Jamal Williams hadn't gotten a touchdown that season. It had been a hard year for him. He had dealt with it. Get the man a touchdown. I'm totally fine with that. You're in victory formation, right? The whole defense is just standing there because they're ready for you to kneel the ball. And you run a real play. That's horrible, man. That's terrible. And then Jameis Winston, his the not press conference, but like the little media scrum by his locker was, it was 3 minutes long. There's a video on Twitter. It's 3 minutes long. It's 2 minutes of him doing the like Jameis for mayor shtick, right? Which is great. I love it. Like, I don't say shtick in a negative light at all, where like you're like buying into it, right? And then they keep talking to him about it. Like, you know, this is messed up. Like, you know, they're going to hate you guys next year. And he's like, what do you mean next year? What are you, what team? Who? We're like almost like, wait, we have to play again? What are you talking? And then he kind of got agitated as he was realizing like maybe this was a bad mistake. So my public Simon announcement is it's not horrible that the Saints scored. It's not you don't have to fire anybody. It's not amazing either. Let's not act like it was this like super altruistic great thing, because it was messed up, but nobody needs to get fired of it. So that's my public Simon announcement. Scoring out of victory formation is pretty bush league. I don't love that. This could also be a don't do that. Just don't do that. Don't score out of it. Just if you're going to change the play, like he even said in the interview, like, oh yeah, Dennis Allen told us to, you know, go do kneel down. But on the way out there, we were like, no, we're going to run the ball. Change the formation then, at least like give the defense a chance, because now whenever you play the Saints, they get in victory formation. If Jameis is out there, you're gonna run and hit somebody because you don't know, and then somebody's gonna get hurt. So it's an issue, but there's my thoughts on the whole Saints part of it all. Ben,
you're exactly right, because what will happen next year, and it might not even be in a Saints Falcons game, it might be in a different game where somebody's lining up in a V formation and somebody, you know, a defensive tackle starting to get a little suspicious and they just line up and punch the center right in the face, you know, and then you have a big scrum. So, I mean, Bush League is a great word. And it's also Winston being Winston. Those of you who know Winston's background, he has a rather long list of things like this, going back to his college days at Florida State. So not a good look for him either. All right. Let's move on. I think we've had enough of that one. Commander's head coach, general manager Ron Rivera is out, and Bob Myers is in from the NBA. So, Ronan, first take.
I don't have much of a take on Bob Myers. I think you two will probably have the better hold on that. But it was probably time to let Ron Rivera go. He's been good for the culture. Kind of, because things have also gone very poorly under his tenure, and at one point he didn't even know that he was playoff eligible. So there are definitely cases to be made for Rivera heading out, but he's a pretty I don't know if historic coach is the word, but he's been a very notable coach over the past 10-20 years. So end of, I guess, kind of an era in terms of Rivera in the NFL, but that's going to be a fun opening to see who comes in there and tries to kind of rebuild the Commanders, right? There's a lot going on in that organization, and bringing in a guy like Bob Myers who has had success in the NBA. I'm very excited to see what's to come for the Commanders, Simon.
Yeah, this was definitely well known. I think the most well known that could be out there. Funny moment was, I think it was just this week, Ron Rivera in his press conference, he talked about like, oh, for the last 2.5 years, I've been managing this team. For the last 5 weeks, I've been coaching. And I was like, well, brother, like, you've lost the last 5 weeks. What does that say about your coaching job, man? This was real tough for Ron Rivera, but, you know, it was a bad situation. He did the best he could. I don't know if he, I think to Ronan's point, I don't know if he like really helped with the culture, but he kept the ship afloat as best he could. A good phrase that I like to hear is he was the violin players rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, right? Just like, hey, we're going to do the best we can. The Bob Myers angle of this is super interesting. So this came out maybe like 30 minutes after Rivera's firing was announced, I think 30 minutes to an hour or so. And so it turns out Myers is being brought on as a consultant to Josh Harris. So it's not an official role. It's a consultant specifically to help with the hiring process of GM and head coach. And this is great. I mean, this is a guy that has hired staff and personnel and leadership for a championship organization in the past. You know, talk about winning culture, talk about how to know, you know, read a BS meter in an interview room, stuff like that. Really, really important. And I like the idea of, you know, we talk about with coaching youth sports, it's like you don't specialize too early, right? Play as many different sports as you can. Why can't we do that as, you know, GMs and decision makers for sports teams, right? Like flex the brain muscles a little bit and bring in some outside perspective. Now, my silly take on this is the Commanders are building a basketball team. You've got Josh Harris, you've got Magic Johnson, you've got Bob Myers in the building. Every mock draft has to include in the first round a guy who was like had like D1 scholarship offers to play basketball and just chose football instead. This is also a good time to note Drake May's brother. Anybody know Drake May's brother? Luke May, former UNC basketball player who hit the game winner in the national championship 1 year, I believe. So Drake May going to the Commanders confirmed that they're going to be like, wait a second, this guy's a brother that played it. Oh, that's our pick. Do what you got to do. So Drake May, welcome to DC, my friend. Ben?
Commanders have a lot of work in front of them. They've got the entire offseason to get going on it. They missed the playoffs, so they've been working on this for a while. I think everybody, including Ron Rivera, knew that Ron was leaving at the end of the season. If he took any time to reflect on it at all, he knew that at least. So no surprise
Ben,
there.
I have a question for you because you've done a lot of you have a lot of thoughts on this, having done the podcast with Robertson. Going into the year when the Commanders brought in Eric Bieniemy to be the OC. A lot of our thought process and speculation was Ron Rivera is going to do as good of a job he can to position himself to move more out of the coaching realm and into a front office type consultant role with the team and usher in Bieniemy as the head coach. Do you think there's any chance they keep Bieniemy on as head coach, or is this going to be a clean slate sort of thing for the Commanders, you think?
Maybe 90-10. 10% chance they keep him, 90% chance they clean house. That's kind of my feeling. I don't feel like the owner's probably too much in the mood to keep anybody around, even if he does like them. Kind of my thoughts on it.
Yeah.
Panthers let go of general manager Scott Fitterer, speaking of cleaning house. So, Rhoda, first impulse, man.
You know what? It's been tough times in Carolina, especially in that front office with the owner dumping a beer on some fans. So, I don't know a whole lot about Fitterer, but the way that this team was constructed clearly wasn't good enough, as they earned the first overall pick, the worst record in the league. But they don't have that pick because they made a deal with Chicago. So it's understandable that there are things that you can say I can see the vision, right, with some of these moves that Carolina has made, but ultimately it hasn't worked out, and someone's got to pay for it. And unfortunately for Mr. Fitterer, it was him. Simon?
Yeah, it was kind of just an eye roll as my first thought, but someone was, again, I was on Twitter a lot today, guys, reminded everyone that Fitterer was the guy next to David Tepper when he threw the drink and just was like staring forward with his hands in his pockets. Like, I'm not going to draw his attention. You know, like someone else alluded to it, like when your parent comes home from work and they're in a bad mood and you're like, I'm just not going to move or say anything, and I hope I don't get yelled at tonight. That was Fitterer. And right now, when he either got that email or you know, had that meeting, he was probably like, I should have just reacted and told him that was messed up and got in his face if I was going to get fired anyways. Like, what a regret. Like, we all have that boss that we were like, I wish I had just told them off one time on my way out, right? Just before. And maybe he did on the way out. But in that, if I knew that it was going to be my last day or my last days, gosh. And like, that would have looked good on camera too, right? That would have played well for like his character online. Instead, he looked like the guy that was too scared to stand up to his boss.
Carolina's a clown show right now. There's no other word for it. They've been pretty pathetic in terms of quarterbacks coming in and out, coaches coming in and out. It's gotten worse this year. And from the owner to cleaning house after one season for Frank Reich, three seasons for Ritterer, it's just a clown show. I mean, there's no other word for it. The house is burning down. I don't see any bright lights for the future here, not because of personnel on the field so much as what's going on up in the owner's box. Everything from throwing drinks to you can't keep a guy in the building for very long. So it's not looking good. They have worked themselves into one of the worst franchises in football at the moment. So they need to get their head out of their butts and start stepping it up, because it's been a joke ever since Stepper got here, quite honestly. So we'll see if they can do any better. Giants defensive coordinator Wink Martindale said, I don't want to be here anymore. Simon, first thoughts.
First thought was, well, actually, my actual first thought was, Ben, all the conversations you and I have had of late of like, who's a good fit for Wink Martindale, like defensively, like, oh, how should they continue to scheme this up? And it's like, nah, that's all down the toilet. So that's a bummer. save those texts for wherever he ends up next, because he'll be with a team in a couple weeks, I think. But also just like, man, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? We were seeing all those reports, what, 2/3 of the way through the year about him and Daboll not getting along. And they played it nice for the media and got through it, right? Wink got the game ball that week at the end of the game. But this was just two dudes who could not stand each other. And by the end of the season, Wink, you know, was the next day, he was like, all right, I'm out of here. I think he's taken like a couple of the top assistants with him, guys that he brought in, and just like, I'm calling them to the next thing, man. I can't do this anymore. So the Giants talk about a team that not quite like the house is burning down, but a lot of questions to be answered. They obviously invested a lot in this team after last season going into this season, both offensively and defensively, right? They brought in Bobby Okereke to captain that defense at middle linebacker for Wink Martindale. They draft Deontay Banks in the first round, and now he's gone. So do those guys kind of, I don't think Okereke will fall by the wayside, but does Banks lose something in this, right? Isaiah Simmons, a guy that they got from the Cardinals, dealt with that in Arizona, right? He fell out of favor with his coaching staff and thing, you know, new coaching staff comes in, things change. What kind of fallout are we going to see from a defensive personnel standpoint based on the new DC? That'll be really interesting. Ronan, what are some of your thoughts on this?
You know, obviously Martindale has a pretty good track record. He puts together a good defense typically. It seemed like it was kind of destined. He and Daboll just didn't get along. Daboll, obviously the head coach, he's going to get his way 9 times out of 10. Just an unfortunate year for the Giants. Injury had a lot to do with that. There was a lot to write off of from last year, a lot of momentum that could have been carried over into this year, and it felt like none of that was ever there at all at any point this season. Saquon looked like Saquon, so I guess that's something that you can take away from this year in a positive light, but just an overall disappointing year from the Giants, Ben.
Simon, I'm going to come back to you in just a minute. I'm going to put you on the spot. I hate to do that, but I it's interesting.
I think I knew what you were going to do, and I started thinking about it.
I figured so, yeah, because I think you and I are thinking along the same lines here. What team or teams would you think maybe you would love to see Wink Martindale go to, whether you think they will or not, that you would just like to see? Ronan, I'm going to flip it over to you here. How do you feel about Brian Daboll right now? Because we mentioned that during last year, everybody loved him. In fact, there was no shortage of people who were stepping up to say, hey, I love the Daboll hire before all of this started. Now I surely love it. Well, we fast forward a year and he's having arguments and he's making Daniel Jones look bad on national TV early in the season. Now his DC quits because they can't get along. And now they owe Daniel Jones a lot of money. And so how do you feel about Daboll right now? Everybody loved him a year ago.
You know, it is worrisome because he's an offensive guy. And it seems like him paired with Martindale was kind of a match made in heaven. Martindale kind of deals with the defensive side of things while he kind of focuses on the offensive side. It is worrisome. He's not dealing – the cast that he's got, it's just not necessarily good enough. Daniel Jones, at the price that they're paying for him, that's kind of a question mark. The receiving core is definitely a question mark. The offensive line, you can definitely mark up as a question mark. And then the defense that Martindale just left, right? I mean, it's a Martindale defense, right? It's constructed, Simon, like you said, to be his defense. And now someone is going to walk in there and take over it. So they might have to purge, you know, half or three quarters of the roster, or at least on defensive side, to suit whoever comes in there next. Now, naturally, you'd assume that they'd try to get someone who can kind of work with what they've got to a certain extent. But I'm worried for Daboll because I think he's a good play caller and I think he's a good coach. I just don't think he's in a great situation right now, Ben.
I like Brian Daboll, but it's not a good market to be having these kinds of struggles in. When you're in the New York market, and Simon mentioned it, they did a pretty good job of playing nice for the last few weeks. But when you're in the New York market, you can't be having all these struggles. What happens next year if Daniel Jones gets injured again halfway through the season and Daboll has another losing record, even if his team is fighting hard? Now, stay tuned. We'll see. I do like Daboll. I'm just not sure I like him with all these struggles here at the New York media market. Simon, what you got here on the Wink Martindale situation?
Ben, we've been doing this together too long, man, because, yeah, this is exactly what I knew you were going to go. All right, so I just put together, like, 10 teams that stuck out to me just kind of looking at the list here. So, first one I want to mention but quickly eliminate, Raiders. I would love Max Crosby and this team with Wink Martindale and that defense. They've struggled to draft defensive backs and corners and have good guys, so this is an easy way to do it, right? Just go get the guys that fit the prototype. But I think AP and his staff is going, and this incumbent staff, at least most of it, are going to be back next season. The Titans, if Mike Vrabel leaves, this is a team that needs to rebuild its defense. Same thing, good front seven, struggles on the defensive back area. So Martindale would be a good one. And like the Titans just like feel like they would fit, just like let's just blitz and hit you in the mouth kind of day, that kind of thing. Two teams, if their defensive coordinators get hired away, Minnesota and the Rams. If Raheem Mostert and Brian Flores were to get head coaching jobs, Martindale would be perfect for the way the Rams are built right now. Just young, fast, run around and do a bunch of crazy stuff. And Minnesota, he and Brian Flores do a lot of the same stuff. So they could keep doing what they're doing. They don't have to change it. And they just continue to add the talent into the scheme they have. Now, here are the teams. The Falcons with Arthur Smith being gone came to mind, but Ryan Nielsen, the DC that they hired this year from the Saints, I'd like him to stay for whatever head coach comes in. Because like Ronan says, if you can have a head coach who's offensive minded and then have a veteran DC or at least incumbent DC and just say, you focus on that. Like what the Colts did this year, Shane Steichen comes in, but Gus Bradley, a veteran defensive coordinator, hey, you focus on the defense. It's my first year. Let me get this head coaching thing and the offense under control. You take over the defense. That works. I think the Falcons incumbent DC should stay there, Ryan Nielsen. So here are the teams that I actually like. There's the Chargers and the Commanders, right? Two teams that are going to be looking to put together a whole new coaching staff. Same thing. You go hire a offensive-minded head coach. You let Wink handle the defense. Two, you're going to be, I think, if what I think is going to happen with the Chargers happens, young rebuilding defenses, a la what the Rams did this year. But here's two good teams that drastically need to improve their defense, and it's my favorite. These are my top picks. The Green Bay Packers, who under Joe Barry have never had a successful defense, and the Seattle Seahawks. I don't know if Pete Carroll will give way enough to Wink Martindale to let him take over, right, and be fully in charge of the defense. But the defense hasn't been working, and oh boy, boy, oh boy. I mean, it would be a huge cultural shift, I think, in the way they would play the defense. But Pete Carroll has even alluded to in the past that, like, he knows that they might need that at some point. That's my dream one. If I can get the Seahawks team with an extra defensive mind, it probably won't happen because of Pete. So Green Bay is that, like, perfect intersection of, like, could happen, and I would really like to happen. This offense is ascending. It became a top 10 offense by the end of the year. This defense needs an overhaul. Matt LaFleur would still be able to just focus on the offense. We talked about it last week. I think they have so many good pieces on the roster. Bring Wink in and just let him cook. Maybe Alexander doesn't fit anymore in that aspect, and you do trade him and you get some young outside corners. But you have that defensive front that can blitz and do what Martindale does. So Green Bay would be my top of the list choice, Ben, for Wink Martindale.
Love the list. You're right. He will not be without a job for long. I'm sure he knows that, or he wouldn't walk away from the job he's currently got that willy-nilly. I actually like the Commanders thing, not only because their defense was pitiful last year when it should have been a lot better, but also how cool would it be to have him on the opposite sideline from the Giants for two games this season? Spice that up, buddy, just a little bit. So I love that. On a sadder note, Chargers center Corey Linsley is probably retiring, from the reports that we're hearing anyway, due to heart condition that has kept him out for this year. Simon.
Yeah, Corey Linsley. I mean, when we put together our offensive line rankings, Ben, and last year when we did our, like, top at each position, he's one of the best centers in the game, has been for the last several years. And then you look at, like, why did this Chargers offensive line struggle so badly this year? And he only played two or three games before they figured out he had this heart condition, and it kept him out the rest of the way, and just completely unexpected in terms of, you know, you have two young guards, two second-year guards in Zion Johnson and Jamari Sawyer, who are switching positions from what they played last year as rookies. And you think you have this anchor in the middle that's going to help take care of that and help usher them into that role. And you don't have that. You have a guy in Will Clapp who I had never heard of before the year. And it's just, it was a mess. The offensive line all year was a mess. So tough stuff for this year. And just really, I mean, Corey Linsley, a great career. I don't know in terms of, maybe probably not a Hall of Famer. I don't know his exact accolades off the top of my head. Maybe a Hall of Honor guy for the Packers, right? One of their better centers for a really long time. But either way, just a really good player for a long time. And when it comes to offensive linemen, man, especially, you know, when they kind of go out mid-season, it could be easy for people to forget them. So hopefully Linsley just has a long, healthy life, happy life after this. And just don't forget, this was one of the better centers of our time here in the last several years. So shout out to him. Congrats on a great career, Ben.
Ronan?
No, absolutely. It's wildly unfortunate that poor Linsley has to most likely retire due to this heart condition. But there's, looking at his entire body of work, there's nothing, you know, to hang your hat on, or I guess to hang your hat. He had a great career. I don't know how that phrase goes. I apologize. But looking back at his career, it was a good one. Wherever he went, he was, you know, a leader on that offensive line front. And, you know, up until his last game, he was a poor piece. And that's kind of probably the way that these guys want to go out is at the top. Obviously not this way, but as going out at the top is a pretty honorable way to go, Ben.
We don't yet know, or at least it's not come across my desk, how serious this is in terms of off field. So we wish them the best there. This is, for the Chargers, this is a real bummer, and already has been, because this is exactly, speed receiver aside, the kind of guy they need. Somebody who's incredibly good and right in the middle. They need it on the defensive line. They need it right up the middle of their defense. They need it on the O-line. And now to lose another guy like this, I mean, it's just kind of adding insult to injury for the Charger side of things here. So we'll see what they get, what they come up with here to kind of work on to replace this. But we wish Linsley the best. All right, it's time for our playoff preview. We've got 6 games to get to. A lot of good stuff. Simon, go ahead and set the table for what we're going to do, man.
Yeah, so we're doing something a little different. We don't preview a lot of stuff on this show. We leave that to Odds On Favorite, which you can catch on what days? Wednesdays? Wednesdays. With Ben Robertson, part of Box Score Network. Make sure you're doing that. But, you know, we didn't have a ton of games to talk about. We breezed through that news pretty quickly for us, I would say. So we want to give a little prediction. We want to try our hands at this. So what we're going to do, we're going to talk about all six games, and we're just going to give one matchup that we're each interested in to see over the weekend. So this can be anything. It can be players on players, units on units, coaches going against each other, fans in the stands we want to see fight. It can be anything. We're gonna give the thing that we're most interested in watching when the game comes on, the key matchup that we're going to be looking out for. And then we each have to stand on business and make a prediction at the end. I'll kick us off here. We'll just start with the 2-7 in the AFC, Bills versus Steelers. I'll give my first one, and then Ben, you can just kind of to give an example for everybody, and then you can continue to shepherd us through the rest of the way. But when it comes to Bills Steelers, what I am most interested in watching is the Steelers back seven versus the Bills pass catchers. More specifically, if I really had to get nitty gritty with it, is Joey Porter Jr. versus Stephon Diggs. Stephon Diggs had that big game this weekend against the Miami Dolphins. It was kind of a bounce back game for him. It had been quiet. Joey Porter Jr. about halfway through the year started shadowing the top receiver of the other team, something the Steelers haven't done as a defense in quite a few years. But Dalton Kincaid is playing well. Khalil Shakir is playing well. Gabe Davis is going to be out for this game. By the way, I didn't mention this. Ian Rapoport got a bag from Gabe Davis's agent to announce his injury, because I praise Rapoport on this show pretty frequently and to you guys pretty frequently. But man, oh man, I have never seen so many complimentary rewards in an injury update. So shout out to Rapoport. I don't know. They must be like feeding his horse for him for like a couple months or something. Anyways, how the Steelers match up with the pass catchers of the Buffalo Bills, especially when it comes to Dalton Kincaid, who is being covered by Melvin Ingram by the Dolphins in week 18 a couple times. And that's what I'm worried about. It's going to look like for the Steelers with their linebacker situation. So Bills pass catchers versus the Steelers back seven, you know, linebackers and DBs is the matchup that I'm looking for in this game. Ronan, what are you looking for in Buffalo versus Pittsburgh?
First off, Simon, I like your matchup that you're looking for. I think that is a very fun one to keep an eye on, but I'm going to go with, bending the rules a little bit, cause you said anything goes. I'm going with Josh Allen versus himself.
Good one.
Whenever the Bills turn the ball over, they lose games. Whenever they don't, they win them. And it's just as simple as that. You know, we're at the point where, you know, if Josh Allen is out there leading his team in rushing, can't complain too much, because he probably is. I'd say he's their best rusher, but James Cook had a pretty good year. So I think the Bills on paper should win this game, right? So it will be up to Josh Allen. Is he going to make the mistakes to give the Steelers opportunities to steal the win? Because if the Bills can get out to a hot start and go up two scores before the first quarter is over, and I think that, you know, they should be pretty good. I think the defense is good enough to keep, whether it's Pickett or Trubisky or Rudolph. I guess that's kind of to be determined who's going to be starting for Pittsburgh.
It's going
to
be Rudolph. It's going to be Rudolph. Okay. Steelers Twitter, it's going to be Rudolph. Everyone calm down.
Everybody wants Rudolph. Is that where we're at now?
No, people still think Pickett might play. It's crazy. It's done. He's done. Stick a fork in him. Rudolph, I'm the biggest Mason Rudolph hater that there is, at least on the, anyways.
Yeah, aside from
Rudolph is playing. Rudolph is the quarterback.
There's one guy that really made it known that he's not the biggest Mason Rudolph hater or biggest fan of him. And he just so happened to knock him over the head.
We're going to talk about him in a couple minutes, probably.
yeah, we'll definitely will be. Definitely will be. But Josh Allen versus himself, it's going to come down to whether or not he makes if he throws an interception, that's one thing, but if he turns it over 2-3 times to give Tomlin's team, a gritty team, an opportunity to steal it away, I think that's where some problems can arise, Ben.
I'm going to bend the rules just a little bit too here. Instead of a in-game matchup, I'm going with storyline matchups, and that is Mike Tomlin legacy versus Bill's legacy here. And I don't necessarily think that the loser of the game is any worse off. They'll just kind of still have some of the same questions that they had maybe mid-season, right? Because both teams have scratched their way into the playoffs here in a crowded AFC field. So I'm not trying to knock anybody here. But a playoff win sure makes you feel a whole lot better heading into the offseason, even if that's as far as you get. So whether you're Buffalo and you come in here and you beat the Steelers and you say, hey, man, we put together 5 regular season wins to end the season. We pulled out a road playoff victory, and that was as far as we got. You still feel okay. And if you're Mike Tomlin, not that he needs adding to his legacy, but still, it's been a while since he had much playoff success. So doing it with Mason Rudolph here would be a big boost to him as well. Not that he needs it, but again, just for image sake. So that's really where I'm going with this. I want to see who can kind of give a chance to add to their legacy a little bit. And who knows, maybe just maybe the winner of this game next week gets a chance to double down on that. So that sure makes you feel a lot better in the offseason when you can point back to a playoff victory versus just barely scratching your way in and getting bounced out. All right, what else you got on this game, Sana?
Well, you saying this part kind of reminded me. Mike Tomlin talked about his legacy, and we talked about NFL scriptwriters earlier. Mike Tomlin versus Sean McDermott, man. College roommates, college teammates. We're going to get over under 6.5 side-by-side shots of them. It happens every broadcast that the Steelers play the Bills. I'm going hard over. I don't care what the odds are. Okay, so now that we've all given our matchup our matchup that we're previewing, that we're looking for, we'll just go around and we'll make our pick on who wins this game. We don't need a score. We don't need how the game's going to play out. We talked about the key matchups, so just who is going to win. Ben, we'll kick it to you first.
I like Buffalo. Hats off to both teams for getting here, but I still feel better about Buffalo at the moment, all things considered. Ronan?
I'm going to have to ride with you, Ben. I'm just not all that confident in Mason Rudolph leading the Steelers to a playoff win. Entirely possible. Anything can happen in the NFL. And all it takes, like I said, a bad game from Josh Allen, a couple turnovers, and things can go upside down. But I'm going to ride with the Bills on this one. Simon?
I thought about saying the Steelers just to be contrarian and to keep a little bit of my homerism alive, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go Bills as well. Their defense has been rolling. Mason Rudolph started to show some cracks in the armor. It's the Bills got this one. Ben, take us to the next game, man.
Chiefs-Dolphins, the 3-6 matchup. Ronan, first take.
All right, so it's been a long season for Kansas City. Long, long, long season. And really, most of the problems have been offensively, surprisingly enough. I've got my matchup that I'm looking for to be Mahomes versus his receivers. His receivers have dropped an insane amount of footballs over the course of this season. And they've done Mahomes no favors. If Travis Kelce gets locked down, which, I mean, teams have kind of laid the blueprint on how to kind of suppress him this season, it can get dicey. They're going to have to rely on Rashee Rice. They're going to have to rely on maybe like a guy like Kadarius Toney. They've got a couple backup tight ends that always end up making big plays. So Mahomes versus his own receivers, it's going to be, are they going to cooperate with him? Are they going to be able to, make the big time plays, or are they going to drop the ball on a 3rd and 10 in the second quarter, and that kind of sets the course of action for that entire game? Because it's those little things. Even if it's not a 3rd down, if it's 1st down, if they can't get the extra 3 yards and can't get the 1st down, you name it. The Chiefs receivers have to step up in this game. It's going to be a challenge against those Miami DBs. They haven't necessarily all been healthy at the same time this year, but it's not a crew to slouch to. It's a good secondary. It's a good defense in general. I think Chubb's out for the season though, so that's it's going to be a little bit tough in terms of the pass rush for Miami. But Mahomes versus his own receiver. Simon, what do you got?
That's a great one. I love the existential nature of your picks, Ronan. This is great. This is why you're the smart one here. I went with L'Jarius Sneed versus Tyreek Hill. I think this is a great type of matchup. I think this is Traverius Ward was doing this for the Chiefs a couple of years ago, where it's just like line him up against the best receiver and just let him duke it out and see. He's not going to be flashy, but he's going to be physical and he's going to do his best to win. And even when they move Tyreek Hill around, I suspect he's going to follow him as much as he can. And we've seen with the Dolphins, especially because Tyreek's been banged up throughout the year, if you can kind of shut them down early in the pass game and kind of keep a lid on Tyreek Hill early on, they have a hard time trying to unlock him after that. It's kind of like, oh, our screens didn't work. Oh, we didn't get him deep downfield. They did a little bit better in the Bills game, continuing to try and find the soft spots in the zone. But that's why I think with L'Jarius Sneed, if you play a little less zone, you have him right on top of Hill as much as you can. It'll be an interesting matchup, right? If Hill can beat him that first time and open things up and get things going, I think that's going to be the key for Miami to win. And if Sneed can keep a lid on it and keep him under wraps, I think that'll be curtains for the Dolphins in this one. So I'm looking at L'Jarius Sneed versus Tyreek Hill specifically, and how that matchup goes. Ben, what about you?
Simon, I actually like that. That's your best point of the night so far. That's really good. I'm going to stick on that for a second, because if Hill is 95 to 100%, Sneed can't handle it. There's no chance. Hill's too fast. But if Hill is limping and gimpy in this game, which I think he will be, and he's coming in at 85%, Sneed is physical and athletic enough to beat the crap out of Hill right at the line of scrimmage, which is what I would try to do from the start. And then, like you said, if Hill beats him once, then just kind of drop back a little bit. But I think Hill will quickly get frustrated if he's not fast enough to be able to shake Sneed, because Sneed is one heck of a defensive player and has gotten better every season. So I love that matchup. I love the point there. Mine will be the Chiefs running game versus the Dolphins running game. You both alluded to the fact that the offenses have not been great for the Chiefs, especially all year, for the Dolphins of late and against good teams. So both of these offenses could really use a boost, the Chiefs from Pacheco, the Dolphins from whoever's healthy on their side. Both teams could use a boost here in the running game. So if either team can get something going there, that would be huge. Even if it's just one big touchdown, that might be the difference. So if either running game can crack through for one big touchdown, say a 60-yarder, that could be the difference in a game like this, which I expect to be tight and somewhat low scoring, I think. Anything else on this game? All right, Ronan, what's your pick, man?
You know, they've both been struggling offenses at times, but at their fullest, that's a tough one, man. I've been sitting here battling. This is the one that I've been sitting here like, I don't know, because on paper, I think the Dolphins might have the better roster. But man, it's Mahomes and the playoffs. I don't see him losing in the wild card. Give me the Chiefs, Simon.
Yeah, I'm with you, Ronan. Give me the Chiefs. I think the KC has had just enough of a nice bounce back feel against the Bengals 2 weeks ago. I don't like where the Dolphins are at from a health standpoint and a play standpoint. Give me the Chiefs in this one. How about you, Ben?
I mentioned earlier in the podcast that the Dolphins really just don't have anything going right now. So there's just no way I can pick them to win this game, especially going into Kansas City. There's just no way I can do it. So unfortunately, I think it's probably kind of a disappointing, kind of a sad, frustrating end here for the Dolphins to this year. Maybe next year is better, but that's kind of what my feeling is going to be on that. All right, the 4-5 matchup, the Texans and the Browns. Simon, first take.
You know, I had to do this at some point, guys. I am looking at the trench play. I'm looking at how the Texans offensive line stands up to this Browns defensive line. It's been stout all season. I've called it just like a brick wall throughout the whole year. They don't get a ton of sacks. I mean, Myles Garrett has his 14, Za'Darius Smith 5.5, a couple other rotational guys after that. But like Dalvin Tomlinson, the nose tackle, can get in the backfield a little bit, and just they can completely stall any kind of run game. So I think it's going to be similar to what we saw CJ Stroud have to do against the Colts, right? Where their defensive line certainly outplayed the Texans' offensive line for most of the game, but to a much higher level and with a much better number one pass rusher in Myles Garrett. So I'm looking at how that matchup goes. And then off of that, like what CJ Stroud does with it, if he has plenty of time to stand back there in the pocket, then I expect him to light it up. If he's under pressure though, and he has to run around a la Ohio State, Georgia, right, last year in the playoffs, then that's going to be super interesting because he can do it. He's proven it all year long. And he's gotten better at it as the year has gone and he's faced more pressure. So I'm looking to see how this Texans offensive line, which has been beat up all year, they've got guys moving positions, they've got backups for backups in, how they fare against this Cleveland defensive front, and then how that plays into Stroud and what he does in the passing game off of that. So that's what I'm looking for. Ronan, how about you?
Simon, truthfully, I think that's the best matchup of this game. But looking at the opposite side, right, if Stroud is able to, you know, put points on the board, you still got to shut down the Browns offense. And that offensive line is a unit. They can run the heck out of the football, and they can have their quarterback just kind of play, you know, if you want to call it field general quarterback. My matchup is the Browns offensive line versus the Texans defensive line. Because it's going to come down to if the Browns can run all over the Texans, it's going to be a long day for Houston, right? There's not going to be much of an answer to, you know, just monotonous run after run after play action. And then that also ties into January Joe Flacco. You know, how is this defense going to affect pressure Joe Flacco? If you can shut down the run and force, you know, the Browns to beat you with Flacco, I think you have a chance, right? But we've seen times where Joe Flacco will look really good this year. So even then, that might be a challenge. So I think shutting down the Browns at what, you know, their heart and soul is offensively at that run game will be a big matchup, Ben.
Ronan, your take kind of spilled over into mine. I was looking at Joe Flacco versus the Texans defense, which has been pretty good this year. But just 3 or 4 weeks ago, they gave up 368 yards passing to Joe Flacco as he torched them for 36 points. So I'm not sure what's going to change off of that. That's really what I'm looking at. And to be honest, ever since Joe Flacco came in, the Browns have kind of sort of not worried too much about running the football anymore. And they're just letting Flacco cut loose. They've turned into, I think, last I checked, they're either the highest passing team in football since Flacco got there, or they're the second highest. They have completely changed everything there. Stefanski has been willing to flex off of that. So unless they can shut Flacco down, and we've seen Flacco win and still throw two interceptions, so getting picks just isn't going to cut it. They need to find a way to slow him the heck down, or they're going to be going home. So that's the matchup I'm looking for. Simon, your pick.
I'm gonna go Texans, guys. I believe I'm here for it. I think the I ultimately, just like what I said, I mean, we saw Stroud take pressure against the Colts and have a fantastic game. I think this is one step up from that. So he's gonna have to prove himself yet again. But I fully expect him to. So I'm going Texans here.
Houston gets loud. It is a loud stadium. They're passionate fans, especially when their team is winning. There's a lot of juice behind this team. They're so young that they don't know any better. I'm going to roll with Houston as well, Ben.
I love both of these teams. I'd like to see both of them advance from different scenarios, but they're playing each other here. So I actually think the Cleveland Browns are going to win this thing. They've got the better defense. They've right now got the better offense because Flacco over the past few weeks has actually been playing even better than Stroud, and Stroud has been playing well. So I like Cleveland here. It does help that Houston's at home. That really hasn't seemed to slow down Cleveland a whole lot this year. They've just continued to rack up an incredible record in spite of injuries everywhere. So I like Cleveland in this game. We move over to the NFC side. Cowboys and Packers. Ronan, take it away.
So we've got a head coach who used to coach for the Packers, now coaching for the Cowboys. And we've got the guy who replaced the said Dallas head coach, coaching Green Bay still. Both of them having success this year, have had success in years prior. My matchup is McCarthy versus LaFleur, just for strictly for, you know, talking point purposes for the storyline. Did Green Bay make the right decision? Which I don't think that's really much of a question, but, you know, just in terms of, it's just a fun, it's always a fun storyline whenever two head coaches go head to head, whenever one replaces the other and they meet again. It's going to be, they're both obviously the head coaches, so they're not going to be squaring up in a phone booth or anything, but, you know, these are two historic franchises, and with historic franchises come cultures. So I think we're going to see, you know, which culture kind of outclasses the other. It should be a fun one. I think a lot of people are underestimating the Packers, but it's another one of those teams where they're so young that they don't really know any better. Jordan Love had himself a heck of a year. That defense is a little bit suspect, but all you got to do is catch Dallas on a bad day, and you can be walking out of there a winner, Simon.
Yeah, Ronan, I'm very similar to you. I'm specifically going with Matt LaFleur versus Dan Quinn. I want to see – I was – at first I was thinking about Jordan Love specifically, but I think Love is – because he's so early in his career and he's going against this defense that's established and so well coached, it's going to be up to Matt LaFleur to put him in position, especially because I don't think the defense is going to be helping him out at all. I think the Cowboys are going to put 30-plus up on the Packers defense, as you mentioned, suspect at best. So it's going to be up to Matt LaFleur to put Jordan Love, put all these young guys in good position to be in a shootout all game long. How they execute, you know, that's going to be part of it. But how much a team like this really young team can be in the game at all versus a team that has gone through the trials and tribulations of postseason runs between McCarthy and Dak separately from each other and now together. I think that matchup specifically, right? How Dan Quinn prepares for what Matt LaFleur might do and vice versa, that's the chess match that I think throughout this game is going to be really interesting and tell us how close the game even is and if it's something that the Packers even have a chance to be in when it comes down to the fourth quarter. So I'm sticking on the coaching side as well, but LaFleur and Dan Quinn specifically. Ben, how about you?
I'm going to pick up kind of where you left off, Simon, and that is Jordan Love versus Micah Parsons. And where I'm coming from is Jordan Love is just one of the most efficient quarterbacks in football. And I don't mean that as a drag down, because he's also made a lot of fantastic plays, and statistically he's doing a heck of a job. I mean, I don't mean – but efficiency-wise, he's fantastic the past several weeks. I mean, just eye-popping, really is. So you mentioned it, though, if the Cowboys are up 14-3 and Micah Parsons and company can just cut loose, we still need Jordan Love to kind of hang in there and keep making plays to keep Green Bay in the game. So we all know that there's a very good chance that this Cowboys offense is going to put up some points on this Packers D. So now Micah Parsons is just having a heyday back there, and Jordan Love is going to be still needing to make good decisions, still needing to get the ball in good locations, just to give them a chance. So I'm interested to see, and I think he will, I'm interested to see how he can hold up against that, knowing what the Cowboys can do once they kind of get a double-digit lead or once they feel like they're on the verge of just shoving you around. We've seen them do it several times the past two seasons. It's not a pretty sight. So I want to see Jordan Love kind of step up here and keep the game close, keep the game manageable, and then see if you can't get Mike McCarthy to maybe do something that's, you know, a McCarthyism and give you a chance to steal the win, right? That's kind of where I'm at. Ronan, what's your pick?
You know what? I'm going to give Dallas the benefit of the doubt, and I'm going to go with the Cowboys here. Simon?
Yeah, same here. I think they're just going to get out to an early lead. I think this will be a semblance of a shootout, but I think they're going to come ready and ripping and roaring for this one. Ben?
Yeah, I'm the same way. To be honest, Jordan Love plays his best football in the fourth quarter, typically. Not always, but we've seen him enter a lot of fourth quarters with 116 yards passing and then score two touchdowns in the fourth quarter and still win. So there's a chance here that they sneak in the back door and keep this game super close. But I've got the Cowboys winning here. I just it's hard for me to see it any other way. Packers have a chance. There's no question about it. There is a path to victory for them. but this looks like a Cowboys win to me. Ronan, first take on Lions versus Rams, the 3 versus 6 matchup.
Man, you want to talk about storylines. I'm going to have to go with the easy choice here and go Goff versus Stafford. You've got Stafford, who couldn't lead Detroit to a home field playoff appearance, right? You've got Goff, who got sent out by McVay. He wasn't good enough to run the system, got sent to Detroit. Everybody's posting the memes all about Detroit. And then here they are, first home playoff game since, well, I don't know, like, who knows?
30s?
Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Forever ago. It's going to be down to who makes less mistakes, I think. These are two different quarterbacks, but the game's going to come down to, you know, who messes up more. Stafford kind of has that gunslinger mentality, which can get him into trouble. And then Goff can sometimes get a little bit skittish, and that'll get him into trouble. So they both kind of have similar faults, just for different reasons. A lot on the line here. Goff, this is kind of like a legacy game for him here. If he can beat the Rams, that would just be a huge notch under his belt. And, you know, another playoff win for a different team would go a long way for Goff. And then on the flip side, Stafford, you know, he spent all that time in Detroit, wasn't able to get it done, won the Super Bowl with the Rams. And then, you know, now here we are. A year ago, we weren't even sure if Stafford was going to be coming back. We thought he might just be done with all the injuries. And now he's walking into Detroit, playoff Sunday. You can't beat it, Simon.
I'm so excited for the quarterback matchup, man. Shout out my pal Muhammad Mehdi. That all Lions fans are feeling some type of way. And I think a lot of them are nervous, man. I mean, this is what's worse than all those years with Stafford being so great and not winning one? Stafford coming in and winning one when you're feeling real good about yourself. I mean, my gosh, this is so perfect. My matchup that I'm looking at is specifically the Lions outside corner, or Lions corners versus the Rams wide receivers. Cam Sutton and Kendall Vildor and Ife Melifonwu and Brian Branch and Kirby Joe. I mean, these defensive backs, but the outside corner specifically, how those guys match up against these big, hulking wide receivers, playmakers, the guys that can get down and be in the run game and block and also get downfield. And don't get me wrong, these Lions corners, man, they're not scared of anybody. They will stick their face in the fan with anybody. They do not care. So it's not going to be a physicality issue, right? But just the skill level, where these guys are at. I mean, these aren't high pristine level cornerbacks. Cam Sutton is very smart, very good gap player. But he's their number one, and this is a dynamic offense. The Lions run defense has been pretty good this year. It's the pass defense that has struggled. They're young. They're just not that high level of talent. So how they play against these wide receivers, Ronan, how's Cooper Kupp looking for this week? You think he's as close to 100% as he can be kind of deal at this point in the year?
I think so. There's obviously going to be some, you know, limitations, I guess. I don't think he's right at the 100% mark, but right. I would say that he's probably in that 90 to 95, probably yeah. Just a little bit dinged up, tread on the tire from the year.
And I'm surprised you didn't say in the news segment we need to put Puka Nacua as the all-time leader in rookie receptions and yards. So good job by you not being too much of a dictator here on the podcast. Way to go. But
I didn't want to rub it in everyone's face, you know, couldn't rub it in everyone's face. But I mean, God, what a freaking season by Puka Nacua. Who would have thought about that? Good Lord.
I still need to cut the clip of us going through the Rams draft and you not feeling that great and me silently just going Puka Nacua. Cause I know it's in there. By the way, to rain on your parade, Chase Claypool set some rookie records as a wide receiver as well. It's not going so well.
Chase Claypool didn't have Sean McVay dialing stuff up.
Listen, I would never put that on Puka Nacua. Puka's great. But yeah, so those corners versus those receivers specifically, I could see the Lions playing well and being physical and the defense flying around and looking like it's making plays. And then you look up and it's like Cooper Kupp is 7 for 120 and Puka Nacua is like 5 for 89 and has 3 runs for 50 yards. You know, so I think it's going to be one of those things. Ben, what matchup are you looking at here?
Aaron Donald versus the Detroit Lions offensive line. They really need to keep him at least somewhat in bay. You're not going to plan on shutting him down. And I think a lot of NFL offenses have learned that if we've got a good rusher on the other side of the football, we don't have to keep him from getting any sacks or any pressures, but we just can't let him wreck the whole darn game. And so that's really important that Detroit does not let Aaron Donald get the Jared Goff so much right up his face that Goff is going to struggle there. So that's going to be really key for Detroit as well, that they can at least keep Aaron Donald off of Jared Goff enough that he can make some plays. Ronan, what's your pick?
Just before I give it, I think that's a good point, Ben. You know, I think Goff might have a little bit more success stepping up into the pocket rather than rolling out. So that pressure getting generated from up the middle to where he can't typically step up, that might cause a wrench in his plan. I'm going to be a homer, and I'm going to go with the Rams here. I think they've got a legit shot to win it here. You know, they're one of those teams, they've got nothing to lose. Stafford's just kind of going out there. I mean, he might have a little bit of something to lose just because of the fact that, you know, he did play in Detroit, but I mean, this is such a young team in LA that, I'm going to roll with them. I think their offense is rolling enough to, keep up with the Lions. Simon?
I'm going with the Rams too, man. I'm doing it. I'm here
for
it.
Wow.
You're telling, like, you mentioned it at the top, Ronan. Sean McVay shipped Jared Goff off when he realized he was not going to win a Super Bowl with him. He saw what Bill Belichick and the Patriots did to him in that Super Bowl. You're telling me he doesn't know how to get in his head and mess with him? And Raheem Morris as his DC, who I talked about as being a head coach candidate, you think he doesn't have the horses and the game plan to put it together? And you don't think that defense, I think we might have said it about their defense here, but we've said it about like the Packers offense and Texans offense. Like, they're too young to be worried. They don't care. They don't look at Jared Goff and think I'm concerned about this. If we were doing like props, what the keys would be, if Jared Goff has to throw this ball like over 25 and a half times, that's really what I'm concerned about. If the Lions can run the ball, and maybe that's the better matchup to look at, but I'm going with the Rams, man. I think the receiver is going to have a big day. I think they're going to mess with Goff's head. Give me the Rams. Ben, how about you?
The Rams have every right. I think they can win this game. I'm going to pick the Lions simply because they have to win this game. I mean, they've been America's team all year. Everybody loves them. Ben Johnson's probably gone after this year. They got the home field advantage here in this game. They have worked themselves into it. If they lose, they can't lose this game, man. They just can't. They got to figure out a way to get this win. I mean, there's too much riding on it here. The whole freaking city of Detroit, the franchise, Campbell himself is going to face a lot of questions if he can't win this playoff game at home. I mean, even as much as we all love him now, he's going to face questions. Jared Goff is going to start doubting himself all offseason if he can't win this game. I mean, there's just too much riding on it here. Detroit has got to win this game. And by the way, if this was a neutral site game, I bet the Rams probably would be the favorite. All right, so it's a 3.5. It opened up at 3. It's 3.5 right now, and that's here in Detroit. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, I like the Rams a lot here, but Detroit's got to win this game. They have to find a way to win this game. I don't care how they do it or how ugly Goff looks or how good the receivers for the Rams are. Detroit's got to find a way to get it done. So I'm picking them just because of that. Bucks versus Eagles, the 4-5 matchup. Simon.
God, talk about ugly. I mean, man, this is real quick. This is the worst game of the slate, right? Just in terms of absolutely, like, aesthetics and what you actually want to watch, right? I mean, this has got to be the worst one. We didn't really talk about the Bucks. We talked about how bad the Eagles were limping into the playoffs. The Bucks sealed their playoff victory fate by beating the Panthers 9-0. I mean, you don't feel great about it. The specific matchup I want to watch is, once again, I'm going to this well, the Bucks receivers versus the Eagles corners. The Eagles corners have not lived up to what they did last year. They've been banged up. They've looked older. Just as we were worried about, or as people were, I wasn't that worried, to be honest, as people were worried about going into the season. And if there's one bright spot about this Bucks team, it's still those receivers are real good, right? Mike Evans, Chris Godwin. There's a lot you could look at when it comes to this Bucks offense, how much you trust it. But at the end of the day, can Evans and Godwin just win against those corners and make Baker look good and make everything easier for everything else? They don't have to, it doesn't have to be to the level of what I said about Cup and Nacua having big, big numbers, but can they just win enough on the outside and beat those corners enough that it makes everything else easier for the offense? They can move the ball a little bit. They're not giving up short yardage. They're able to get some field goals, even if they can't get touchdowns. I don't need four touchdowns between those two guys, but I just need them to create open spaces for everything else by winning their matchups, right? So that's what I'm looking for. Bucks receivers versus Eagles corners. Ronan, where are you going?
Simon, I'm going to the trenches, and I'm going Philly's offensive line versus Tampa's defensive line. If there are any problems whatsoever from Philly's offensive line, I think that can be a huge problem for the Eagles on Monday. With Hurts injured, right, hasn't really been healthy all season long. You want to keep him borderline untouched all game long, right? And then also in the run game, Philly relies heavily on the run game, especially whenever Hurts isn't feeling 100%. So, I think Philly's offensive line has a lot of weight on their shoulders coming up this week against Tampa. And then can we just take a moment? Baker Mayfield, man, playoff appearance. I mean, it was a couple of years ago that, you know, he was getting shipped out of Cleveland. Then he's like a star. Is he a starter? Is he a backup in Carolina? Then he gets shipped off to L.A. to play, you know, like 24-hour notice. What a whirlwind it's been for Baker Mayfield in the past like year or two. But Ben, I'll kick it to you.
So I'm looking at Tampa Bay Buccaneers offensive coordinator Dave Canales going up against Eagles defensive coordinator Matt Patricia. Nice. And listen, it hasn't been good for the Eagles. And I don't know if I blame Patricia for everything here because it was already going sideways, but it's gotten worse since he stepped in. It's gotten really bad. They're giving up, 30 points a game-ish the past few weeks to teams that aren't very good. And so it's been really bad for the Eagles on that side of the football. And then Dave Canales is starting to get a lot of buzz here for at least interest and interviews for head coaching jobs. Whether or not he lands one remains to be seen. But the job that he's done there with the Tampa Bay offense and with Baker Mayfield, of all people, who anybody could have had this offseason and who nobody really seemed to want too much, and kind of, it was almost as if Tampa Bay kind of just said, hey, we'll grab him because we're not sure we got anybody else lined up, right? And yet Dave Canales has done a good job here. So that's going to be an interesting matchup because I myself don't necessarily trust the Bucs offense or Baker Mayfield per se. But if Canales is pushing all the right buttons and if Patricia's struggling on the other side, I mean, that's a tough way to go right there for Philly. So that's the one I will be watching out for. Ronan, who you got for the win in this game?
Gosh, the Eagles have struggled so much as of late, but it's pretty tough to pick the Bucs here. I'm going to have to go with the Eagles, Simon.
Everything's telling me to take the Bucs, man. Just everything's telling me to take the Bucs. I mean, the Eagles are just so down bad. But at the end of the day, it's do you believe like that last year wasn't a total aberration, right? Do you, for the Eagles, do you believe this is a real top 10 offense? Do you believe this defense has playmakers? Do you believe Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback? If the Bucs weren't coming off of like two like mediocre weeks, right? They lose to the Saints 2 weeks ago. They beat the Panthers 9-0. If they were still kind of on that roll they were on a couple weeks ago, I might feel differently. But they kind of limped their way into the playoffs too. I'm not feeling great about them. Give me the Eagles to win this one. Ben, what say you?
I'm the same way. I just can't pick the Eagles. I mean, I can't pick the Buccaneers to win this game over the Eagles, not knowing all that the Eagles have. And I know they're banged up. And I know the defense is awful. And I know the offense hasn't been as good. I get all that, but I'm just not going to pick the Buccaneers to win this game. So give me the Eagles here.
All right.
All
Well,
right.
those are our picks, guys. I mean, if we were doing the TV graphic thing, I mean, for Bills, Steelers, Chiefs, Dolphins, Cowboys, Packers, Bucks, Eagles, you would see 3 for 3. So that means you should go the other way, probably. I can't wait to listen to Odds on Favorite this week and hear Ben pick the opposite pick that he made tonight just so he can cover all his bases. our one difference is in Texans-Browns, me and Ronan are both on Texans. Ben's on Browns. Lions-Rams, Ronan and I are both on Rams. Ben's on Lions. So we only have a couple differences there. Me and Ronan, hand in hand all the way through this thing. We'll see what happens here. Ben, Ronan, anything else for you guys before we get out of here?
I'm so juiced for this for the just super wild card weekend.
Super
so
wild
juiced.
Card weekend.
Super, super. Love it, dude. Love it.
Oh, man. All right. Well, it's going to be great. Listen, as we get into the playoffs, the podcast will sound a little bit different. We're going to be covering more games than we do during the regular season. Next week, obviously, as the weeks go, we'll have less games to talk about. We'll still cover all news, firings, interesting interviews, if any hirings happen, which I'm sure they won't. And then we'll get into off-season stuff, and that's a whole nother bear. We'll get there when we get there. But for now, we're going to enjoy the games. We're going to talk all the games. I know there was less game talk this week. We'll talk about all these games next week, man. So everybody, continue to follow, continue to listen. Thank you all so much for listening to the Statue Podcast. For Ben, for Ronan, for me, thank you all so much. Have a great week.